News, a record-breaking heat wave is continuing to threaten tens of millions of people across the U.S. East Coast and central states. Temperatures hit 102 degrees Fahrenheit in Washington, D.C. yesterday, setting a new daily record. About 45 million people will experience high temperatures above 100 degrees today. In Washington, D.C. right now, it's 96 degrees and partly cloudy, with an excessive heat warning in effect until 8 p.m., and in New York City, it's 91 degrees with fair skies and a heat advisory in effect until tomorrow at 9 p.m. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, wherever you are listening. You are tuned into Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Piélago, and I'm honored to be joined this Tuesday afternoon by representatives of the Fair Budget Coalition. We have Nikaya Mujahid, who is their executive director, as well as Salim Adofo, who is their campaign and membership manager. Welcome to you both, and thank you for making the time to join us this afternoon.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yes. So before we get started, because we are in the thick of the budget season, and I think that's really important for us to discuss, I do want to ask you all to give us a little bit of background for those of people who may not know, and that may just be one or two people, who do not know who the Fair Budget Coalition is. If you could all give us a general background, a little history on the organization and its goals.
Absolutely. So thanks for that and making space for this intro. I think the history of Fair Budget is really important and gives context to what we do and why we do. So Fair Budget Coalition was founded almost 30 years ago out of a dual-sided need. On the one hand, advocates recognize the importance of collective bargaining and info sharing. Advocates from multiple different issue areas, housing, food access, economic justice, realize that when we advocate in silos, the council and the mayor are able to kind of play a scarcity game and pit people's budget priorities against each other. And so they're able to say, well, if we need money for housing, we don't know how we're going to afford to, you know, eliminate this food desert. We need money for food. Okay, we don't know what we're going to do about housing this year. Y'all need money for the schools. Okay, well, I don't know what we're going to do about economic justice, right? And so advocates began to realize, you know, when we advocate together, one, we know what everybody's asking for, but two, we can uplift each other's advocacy. We can share info and just having the collective knowledge of knowing that, one, we're not operating out of a deficit. DC is abundant. We have a lot of resources here, but sometimes not being in the room with other people who are advocating and other people who are tracking the resources makes it easier to create a narrative that says we don't have the money for all the things that we need, and we really do. And so that was one side of the need, you know, making sure that advocates are together, we're sharing info, we're advocating together, we're uplifting each other's priorities, we're not competing. But on the other end, there's the need of making sure that the community is involved in budget policy and budget advocacy, right? And so making sure that everybody in D.C. pays into this pot that we're spending with the budget, right? Whether you pay property taxes, whether you pay taxes through your employment, whether you, you know, anything you buy, you pay taxes in DC, right? And so we're all contributing our funds to the budget. We as advocates, paid advocates, non-paid advocates, really are invested in doing the work of making sure the DC residents are aware of what's happening with our dollars, with our money, but also that we're making demands around that money. And the way that the budget book is produced, the way that, you know, traditional advocacy around budget happens, it can be very wonky. It can be very inaccessible. And so, again, on the other side, there's a need to make sure this work is accessible, make sure it's meaningful, and make sure that we're bringing the community to the table. And so that's what Fair Budget has been doing for about 30 years. And Fair Budget originally started as housed within the Washington Legal Clinic for the Homeless and has expanded since then. It has been a woman-led organization from the beginning, and then for about, I think, at least the last decade has been run by Black women. And so I'm standing on the shoulders of amazing women who have led this work for multiple decades.
Thank you for that. And I think it's so important to underscore how difficult it can be to work through the budget. I mean, I've been doing this work now for, you know, well over a decade, and every year I learn something new about the budget that I'm like, wait a sec, I didn't know that last year.
That's so, right.
Yeah, I think that's something so important. And just being part, you know, being a member of the Fair Budget Coalition is where I do a lot of that learning. So thank you. Salim, anything to add to that, especially as a newer member of the Fair Budget team?
I think that it's important for us to realize that when we're looking at this budget, it's a massive document. It's a lot of pages, right? It's thousands of pages. And we're talking billions of dollars, close to $20 billion. And I don't think there's one person that can sit and say that they know the budget from front to end in depth and has the acumen to really look at this thing and know what's the best way to allocate funds. And so with that being said, having a coalition of policymakers, of activists, of laypersons that can take a hold of this document and look at it and say, okay, well, I'm gonna focus on housing issues, or I'm gonna focus on community safety, or I'm gonna focus on food access. And when we all come together and sit and discuss it, and then we can see how some of these things overlap, I think speaks to the beauty and the purpose and the intent and the necessity for a Fair Budget Coalition. And this city doesn't just represent one particular constituency. So you have a lot of different needs, and it's going to take a coalition of people to look at this thing and see how we can best service the residents of the District of Columbia. And so I think with that being said, that's the mission and the intent of the Fair Budget Coalition.
That's right. No, thank you. That's so important, you know, especially putting, you know, hardworking folks that have been here and made this city the great city that it is, centered in making demands. I think that's the important part too in all of this, is that it's not just an exercise in us knowing how the budget works. It's knowing how the budget works so we can make actual demands. Like, we need this money here. And I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, if I could add to that, I think it's also important that folks who, you know, oftentimes are excluded from these conversations, people that are working sometimes two or three jobs, some folks who don't have the access to higher levels of education, some folks that may be returning citizens, a lot of people just don't understand this massive document. And so I think where the Fair Budget Coalition comes in at is bringing some of these people in the room to make this stuff accessible to people and let them know, look, you have a voice. Right? Your voice matters. It is important. And if you're someone who doesn't have an address, or you have the most expensive house in the city, both of you have equal access to this. But we also got to make sure that the resources are distributed equitably. So we know that there are some folks who, like I said, may not have access to a lot of resources. That doesn't mean that, you know, they shouldn't get anything. And so I think the Fair Budget Coalition is here to make sure that, you know, the people who don't have can get that kind of access.
No, that's exactly right. Thank you so much for that. Now, let me ask you also, we know the budget process is essentially all year long, but it does, you know, ramp up at a certain time of year. And then, of course, there's a date certain where, at least here in the district, we approve our own budget. Then we got to give it to the federal government to mistreat us. I'll just say it that way and make decisions for us. But nonetheless, why don't we talk a little bit about, so there's like the mayor's process, right? The mayor develops her budget, then she gives it to the city council. But parallel to that, the Fair Budget Coalition and many, you know, the individuals and organizations that make up the Fair Budget Coalition are doing the same thing, are putting together the platform of demands, of needs that are, you know, reflected from its membership. Talk to us a little bit about how that process happens. What happens as the mayor, you know, is collecting her budget information from her different agencies? What is the Fair Budget Coalition doing to make sure there is a more fair and more just budget?
Yeah, so thank you for naming that. Yes, like there is, there's multiple processes at play here, right? And so we're navigating like what's happening the council, the mayor's side, as you say, it gets passed off on the federal side, and then we have our own budget processes that we're navigating as a coalition. So at the same time that the mayor is working with different agency heads and department directors to figure out, you know, like how money should be allocated in those spaces, we're working across six different issue groups to figure out how we think the budget should be prioritized. And so our six issue areas are housing, security, food access, economic justice, community safety, fair taxes and public deals, and healthcare. So at the same time, the mayor is trying to figure out with the agencies and the departments where funding should go. We're working with constituents, policy experts, advocates, organizers to figure out where should the budget be allocated across those six issue areas. So in community safety, where do we need funding? Where do we need less funding? In housing, where do we need money? Where do we need less money? What programs need to be funded? What programs aren't working? Where do we need more housing vouchers? Where do we need less housing vouchers, right? And food access, what programs are working, which aren't, right? What's making sure that children and seniors are getting fed and what isn't? So that's happening in kind of a parallel time. And so through the fall, we're working with, again, organizers, advocates, policy experts, lawyers across these six different issue areas to figure out, like, what are our budget priorities and what are our budget demands? And so it takes a lot of research. It takes a lot of cross-organization info sharing. And so that's what we do through the fall. By the time the winter comes, we have already figured out what our budget priorities are for the budget season, right? And so, for instance, this past year, we've been planning for fiscal year 2023, right? And so by the time the winter came, we already knew what our budget priorities are. We had already identified, like, this program doesn't work. Let's take money out of here and put it here. This program could use some more funding, et cetera. Sometime late winter, mid-late winter, usually around February, early March, the mayor has budget forums, right? And so it's an opportunity to bring the community together for the community to say, okay, this is what's working in my community, or here's a community-led solution. We want funding here. Or could you stop funding this thing? It's terrible. We hate it. It's oppressive, right? What most folks don't know is that by the time the mayor's budget forums happen, the mayor's pretty much finished the budget. Budget forums happen right before the mayor releases their budget plans. And so it really isn't much time for the mayor to say, okay, well, the community said this, let me create a budget around it, right? And so on our end, we've already met with the community. We've already spoken with folks, right, on the front end. So the mayor has their budget forms late winter and then comes out with the mayor's proposed budget after that. Around the time that the mayor is coming out with their proposed budget, we've already come out with our budget platform normally. And our budget platform says, look, okay, this is how, you know, we think the money should be spent. We've talked with our communities, we spoke with advocates, we spoke with service providers, and this is what the budget should look like. This is where we need more money, this is where we need less money on. The mayor comes out with their budget. Sometimes the things align and sometimes they don't. So sometimes we'll look at the mayor's budget and we say, oh, great, okay, they funded this thing that we were asking for. They funded this thing that we've been advocating for 10 years. Sometimes we look at the mayor's budget and say, wow, none of the community's needs are funded here, right? We see a huge amount of funding going to, not going to name any programs, but again, things that don't work. And we're not seeing any of the money going to where the community's demanding, where advocates and organizers are saying we need the money, right? And so mayor comes out with their budget. We come out with our budget platform. The council plays defense a little bit. So the mayor comes out with the budget and then the council says, okay, we want to edit it. We see some things we like, but we also see some things we don't like. And here's what we would like to see prioritized. Let's switch some things around. Because at the end of the day, the council has to approve the budget, right? The mayor comes out with the draft of the budget, but it's the council that says yeah or nay. It's the council that says, okay, we like it a little bit, but we need to tweak this, right? And so in between the mayor coming out with their budget, which normally happens around March, and the council voting on the budget, which happens late spring, sometime May, June, we're advocating in communities and towards the council and saying, look here, this is what the mayor released. We like it or we don't. And this is what the budget should look like. The last couple cycles, it has been more so we don't like it because a lot of, you know, what we were advocating for, we're just not seeing in this mayor's budget, right? So we're saying, hey, look, you know, rapid rehousing needs this many more millions of dollars. And this is what we need. This is how we know. We've spoken with the community. Here's our number. And so we're heavy at the council, making sure that they know what our demands are, making sure that they're understanding why we have these demands, but also in the community and making sure that the community, like, look, you know, here's how we have heard what the needs are through our work in the fall. This is how we have incorporated, you know, what our understanding is of your needs and your demands. And now it's time to activate. Now it's time to show the council, like, look, we're standing on this platform. We believe in it. We're demanding it, and we're not taking no for an answer. So that happens through the spring. And the council votes. This year it is in May, sometime between May and June. The council votes is in May. And then we see what the council approved or what they didn't approve.
Thank you for that. Salim, as a campaign and membership manager, what is your role throughout the process?
My role is to make sure that the member organizations' voices are heard, contacting them and making sure that they get budget recommendations into the coalition, making sure that they're reaching out to their different constituencies, having meetings, engaging people, collecting the data, doing all of that on the ground work. And then we figure out how we want to advocate to the community with this information. So I deal with the membership in that way. Then once we get the information, then it's okay. How are we going to push this out to the community? How are we going to push this out to council members? We've been meeting with some council members over the last couple of weeks to make sure that they understand what our priorities are, seeing what was funded, what was not funded, and how we can fill the gaps in some of those areas.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. Now, I know this can be tough, but what are some of the things that we think are missing in this year's budget? I know, although it's not a direct budget ask because I think the program's still there, but rapid rehousing, a lot of people are potentially going to lose their housing. I think there was some stuff around either flat funding or no funding for local vouchers. Talk to us a little bit about some of the things we know we need more of, right? We need more investment, more funding, because people's lives and safeties depend on it.
Yeah, so I'm glad you touched on rapid rehousing, because I think that's one of the most significant and problematic things that we're seeing in the mayor's budget. For those of you guys who don't know, rapid rehousing is a program that for families and individuals who are experiencing homelessness, our government tries to rapidly get them in housing, right? And so the goal is to get them in out of shelters or out of being unhoused, and to get them in housing for 12 to 18 months. The problem is that the expectation is that by the time your 12 or 18 months is over, you can afford full market rent. That's not reality. Rent is very expensive in D.C., and particularly if you're coming from being unhoused in a shelter. 12 months is barely enough time to begin building community and integrating into the neighborhood that you've been placed in, right? If you think about it in the case of a family, let's say you're in rapid rehousing, you get moved into a neighborhood, you're brand new to the neighborhood, your kids have to be enrolled in school, right? You have to figure out childcare. You may be able to find a job there, maybe you can't, depending on how old your children are, you know, whether or not you have skills to enter, you know, or the education to enter the job market where you are, the neighborhood you are, et cetera. By the end of 12 to 18 months, you're supposed to be able to fully afford your rent and have done all the integration that you need to do to take care of yourself, your family, and in entirety, and you're dropped from the program. And so what it does, in effect, is cycle people in and out of homelessness. And it can be traumatic because, again, we're thinking about not just individuals, but families. And so we're seeing children have to switch schools over and over again. We're seeing children, mothers, families, fathers having to create community over and over again and lose community and lose support systems, right? This is just unrealistic. And so, and the cutoff is arbitrary. Like, who said, you know, a year and a half, 2 years is enough time for someone to really get stabilized and be able to afford full market rent in DC after clearly not being able to afford rent at all, right? And so our ask for this year was to increase permanent supportive housing for families at $12 million and for permanent supportive housing for individuals at $13 million. We saw both of those funded. However, we wanted targeted affordable housing for families, and that didn't get funding at all. Rapid rehousing in particular we wanted reform and additional funding, and we didn't get that at all. And so over 900 families are about to be cut off of rapid rehousing this spring. Again, not 900 individuals, 900 families. And so these are parents, children, elders who are getting cut from the program. And so, again, going back to the, you know, looking at our budget and looking at what the mayor funded, the mayor is absolutely not doing the work that we asked to happen in rapid rehousing. We're not seeing, you know, another of our asks was to fund PEP V Hotels, which is a program that puts unhoused folks in hotels who either have contracted COVID or are at high risk of contracting COVID. We didn't get funding for that. We asked for funding for domestic violence housing. We didn't get funding for that. We asked for an increase in reentry housing. There's a pilot for folks who are returning citizens. That not only did we not get the funding, it was cut. And so, like, just what we're seeing in terms of funding for housing is just not at all what it needs to be. It's absolutely unjust. It's oppressive. And we think about the racial landscape in D.C., what we know is a lot of the folks who are impacted by this are Black and brown residents, right? And so not only do we have a housing access issue, but we have a racial justice issue. And this, again, has intergenerational effects. Either grandmamas, aunties, mothers, uncles, cousins, children, grandchildren, right, who are just, you know, if you can't pay your rent 12 months, I'm sorry, good luck. Right. And so, again, folks are cycling in and out of homelessness. It's traumatic. We're losing community. Folks lose belongings. It's just really terrible. And so, yeah, that's one of our significant asks. It's just to make sure that we're ending the cliff for rapid rehousing. It's arbitrary. It's unnecessary. And it's really unjust. But it takes money. It takes money to end the cliff for rapid rehousing. And so it's one thing to say, you know, hey, we want everybody housed. Right. The budget is how we know whether or not your elected officials really prioritize what they say. Right. And so it's one thing for an elected official to say, oh, yeah, we want, you know, we want to end homelessness in D.C. If you don't put any money to that, you will not be ending homelessness in D.C. It's one thing for an elected official to say, OK, yeah, food doesn't start a problem in War 7 and War 8. We got to fix that. These babies ain't eating. You know, nobody has access to fresh foods. It's a problem. But then you don't put any money towards ending food deserts. Right. And so the budget is really the biggest accountability tool that we have. And it's the largest agreement that an elected official or governing body makes with this citizens, with its residents, is whether, you know, where's the money going? You can see where people's morals are, where their priorities are, et cetera, about where they invest and where they put their dollars.
That's right. And, you know, I guess I could take it there because it's just part of the process. But, you know, the budget is a good way to evaluate your elected officials. Like, what Absolutely. Did they do? What did they care about? Especially in an election year, right? So.
Okay, say that, especially in the election year, y'all. You heard that? Right. This is a great time to look at the budget. And one of the things that Fair Budget, through our budget platform, is we create accountability tools. So in addition to the budget platform, we produce a report card for the mayor every year that says, okay, look, we asked the mayor to fund this. Did they do it or not? Right. And so it allows you to see, like, look, OK, we asked for this amount of funding, and it has cute little graphics, and like it's an actual report card. So it has grades, and we grade the same way DC PS grades. Right. So the same numeric values, we use the same ones. Look, we asked for 60 million for this. We only got 50. OK, what kind of grade does that give you? We asked for $17 million for tenant vouchers for 800 families. We got zero. That's clearly enough, right? And so it lets you go through item by item and say, okay, did the mayor fund giving SNAP a raise? Did we fund rapid rehousing? Did we fund domestic violence housing? Did we fund a DHS homeless person? Like all the things item by item that we've prioritized as a coalition and as constituents and as a community, and lets you put it side by side with what the mayor did or didn't fund. And we do the same thing for the council. So after the council votes, we'll be coming out with the council member impact report that shows, okay, this council member said they care about this, but look how they voted. Sometimes what we see, and it's really interesting, is before the mayor comes out with their budget, the council members send priority letters to the mayor, and they say, hey, you know, on behalf of War 7, this is what we really care about, and this is what we want to see funded. On behalf of War 5, this is what we really need to see. As, you know, the chair of health finance, this is what we really want to see money put into, right? So we see these priority letters, and then sometimes you look at how they vote, and they didn't vote according to the priority letters, right? We only know that if we trace in a budget. We only know that if we're creating accountability tools. We only know that if we're looking at where people are investing. Sometimes it just doesn't line up with what they say, you know, we're invested in. So, again, going back to looking and see who has the power to put money where, who's really doing it, is really important. And so Fair Budget tries to create those accountability tools so the community can do that. Because going back to Celine's point, child, the budget book is dense. It's thick. It's numbers everywhere. It's not very accessible. And our elected officials have done a really good job of making sure it's not accessible.
That's right. Salim, as somebody that's working, you know, with the membership, with individuals, you know, what were you hearing? You know, not that the budget is completely done, but we have a better picture of what's in and out of the budget. What have you heard from membership about the FY23 budget?
We still got a long way to go. honestly, like Makai said, many of the things that we asked for, you know, were not budgeted. But to be fair, there were some things that were. But when you look at it's the overall picture of what we want to, you know, see as what we would consider an act of justice, what would be fair. We know coming out of COVID that there was more money that was put, you know, into the district's budget from the federal government. We watched this city's budget grow billions of dollars over the last few years. So there is an opportunity to do some things, to take an act of justice. So we still got a long way to go, especially when it comes to housing. And I know that organizations such as Empower DC have been on the front lines of this from a variety of different perspectives. And we got a lot of people who walking out of this budget season, unfortunately, maybe left out in the cold, figuratively and literally, if we don't get some of these things addressed. We have an issue group that is specific to community safety, but I look at the entire budget as an opportunity to address community safety. And so we still have a lot of asks. And I think that it's important that we engage the residents. And that was one of the things that we talked about with some of the different issue groups, is that we get residents to advocate, we get residents to sign on, we get residents to call, I was about to say your congressperson, but in this case, you're calling your city council member and the at-large ones. And to be honest, we've been somewhat disappointed in how things have happened, you know, with the budget, knowing that people have been advocating for years for some things, and to see us still at this point of having to ask for the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, and then over and over and over again, is somewhat disappointing. But there's still a lot of room for growth. And I think that what we're seeing within the coalition is that we are making some strides, though, to get some of those asks. And so I wouldn't want to say that it's not been successful. We've gotten some things done, but we still have a far way to go.
No, thank you for flagging that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're also hearing that I want to add, just like in terms of process and accessibility, is we're hearing from residents over and over again that like the budget process outside of fair budget, but just like the budget process as far as council and the mayor, is wildly inaccessible, and like folks feel shut out, right? Even when it comes down to the budget forms, like folks don't feel included. They don't feel heard. When it comes down to like creating testimony for the council, folks often like, you know, I came up here, I relived my trauma, I told my story, I told you why this fund is important, and you still didn't listen to me. And so part of what we're working to do at Fair Budget is like not just address budget outcomes, but address the budget process. Because if people are telling us over and over again, like this process that DC has doesn't work, this process doesn't make me feel included, it's not censoring my needs, it doesn't censor my voice, we have a larger problem than not having the funding for rapid rehousing. We have a larger problem than not getting the funding that we need for public housing. We have a larger problem than, you know, the reallocation of money from MPD to DDOT that we asked for. We have a bigger problem in that our residents don't feel heard and included. And so I think part of the way that Fair Budget stands in the gap is creating processes that, you know, maybe you don't feel like you're included at that table, but here's how you can meaningfully be in this table. And to Salim's point, not only do we want residents advocating and, you know, like making sure that our budget platform is heard, but a large part of our work is making sure that we know how to center advocates in creating the asks. And so do we know how to workshop community-led solutions? Not, you know, we're going to create these solutions and we're going to create budget asks and we need you to advocate for them and stand on them. But are we doing the work of making sure that, like, folks in our communities and the most impacted folks, like you said, the folks working 2, 3, 4, 5 jobs, folks who are receiving TANF, the folks who are in rapid rehousing, know how to come to the table and say, okay, I have a demand. I've seen some in my community and I have a solution, and here's how we're going to turn it into a budget solution. Because largely the mayor isn't doing that and the council isn't doing that. And so part of our work and part of our mission, our value, is to stand in that gap and say, okay, we can do that. And we produce an alternative budget platform, and we know how to get to the council, and we know the mayor is looking for our budget platform. And so here's how we finna do it. Here's how we finna freak that process to make sure you can be involved. And so I think that's a significant part. But it goes back to, we're hearing that residents are not feeling involved in the formal processes.
No, that's right. And I think that's important work to be doing, because like you said, folks, you know, folks know what the deal is, right? Folks know what's happening. And the solution really is to fund it, right? It's building that, as you mentioned, not only, you know, education is very important, but what consequences can we create as organized people to the people making these decisions? And that could be voting, it could be a bunch of different consequences. So super important work. Folks, you are tuned into Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. I am joined by Nikaya Mujahid and Salim Adofo from the Fair Budget Coalition. We're talking about the FY23 budget process and the history of the Fair Budget Coalition. So far, we've heard some of the lowlights. And although the budget is not the best process, I want to talk, what was good or what is getting better? Let's say it that way. I can say as somebody that works around public housing, and I think Brother Salim mentioned this, you know, sometimes it takes a while. It takes a while. It's incremental. It's every year you take one step and, you know, hope that you could take another step the following year. But we have seen some more investment in public housing repairs, which it was really great. On the other hand, we continue to see projects like the New Communities Initiative funded at a ridiculous amount of money when the residents who are affected by it, like Berry Farm residents, Park Morton residents, still don't know when the heck they're coming back to their homes, don't know what they're coming back to or if they'll come back to it, but it's still getting funded at at a rate of $219 million of city money. But let me get off the low lights once again. What is getting better and what do we need to keep pushing on?
Absolutely. So one of the most significant wins that we saw this budget season, and again, going back to your point, like some of these pushes take multiple years, right? Some of these things, I keep coming back, knocking on the door and say, hey, here, it's us again. And we're still demanding this. The Healthcare Alliance, we asked for the removal of some barriers. So Healthcare Alliance provides health insurance and healthcare access for whole lot of DC residents, and they were given this 6-month in-person recertification process where in order to maintain access, you got to come every 6 months in person to recertify. One, it's unnecessary, but two, it creates barriers for folks. There's long lines, people will miss deadlines. And again, we're looking at some of the most vulnerable and impacted communities. I may not have the time, the resources, the paperwork, et cetera, to come every 6 months to recertify for a need that I still have. So we've been asking for this for about 10 years. And this year we finally saw it in the mayor's budget that the process has changed. And so we got our ask for the Healthcare Alliance shift. Another thing that we were happy to see funding for was healthy school meals for all. And so we saw funding allocated to DCPS for that. It wasn't specifically allocated for school meals, which is what we asked for, but we did see funding allocated to DCPS that can be used for healthy school meals. And so we were really excited about that. We got almost $8 million in funding for permanent supportive housing, which is going to support about 260 families. And so really excited about that. Also, we saw permanent supportive housing vouchers for individuals. And so it's about 500 individuals. And we got, we asked for $13.8 million. We got $13.5. That's close. We will take it. Actually, it's almost $13.6. And so we love that. And the mayor is getting an A+ in both of those areas. Public housing, as you mentioned, Daniel, we asked for $60 million in public housing repairs. We got 50 and we'll take it. And here's the thing that we know about the public housing repairs. We've seen difficulty in the agency that's responsible for public housing repairs and getting the money out the door. Right. And so one of the things that it would have been difficult for us to do is advocate. We know we need way more than $50 million in repairs in public housing. We know that, but it's hard for us to say, well, we actually need $100 million. We actually need $200 million if they can't even get the $50 million out the door. But we did get 50 of the 60 we asked for. And so we're excited about that and hoping that our agency directors can use that money to create more humane living conditions, because quite honestly, a lot of conditions in public housing is absolutely inhumane and is a human rights crisis. But we got a lot of that funded. We're going to get a Mayor B for that. And we're excited about that. Mm-hmm. So definitely have some wins. Last year, we had a major win in our tax code. And so DC now has the most progressive tax code in the country. That's amazing. And that was one of our asks. It was one of the things we advocated for. We had a multi-year push there as part of our Just Recovery campaign that Fair Budget and DCFPI did a lot of lifting on. So even though that was last year, we're still really excited about that. And one of y'all made the point earlier, like, DC has a surplus of money right now. And, you know, with the tax revisions that we were able to achieve last year, DC will still be fiscally healthy and can still, you know, if allocating the money properly, there's not a shortage of money. We just have an allocation issue and an ethics issue, right? But still, you know, very excited about that win for fair taxes and public deals last year. So we definitely have some wins. And that's the thing about fair budget. Like, you know, we got to come back multiple years. We got to keep pushing for a lot of things, but we're going to always have some wins. And so we had some wins last year. We're expecting some wins this year. We've already gotten some wins in the mayor's budget. We're expecting a few more when the council makes their vote. And so we're excited. It's hard work, but it's good work. And over the years, we can really trace the impact that Fair Budget Coalition has had in moving the district towards a more fair budget.
Well, thank you for that, Nikaya. And I think one point that you make that I want to underscore is we win things in the budget, and that's a really good. The implementation, you know, is it going to get done? So, you know, exactly. That's why I said the work is year round, really, because there's winning the money and then there's holding the agencies accountable. Yeah. That they're doing what they need to do with the dollars.
It's a small undertaking. Like, it takes a lot of research and like numbers tracking to say, okay, we got this money, but did they send it to this agency? Did this agency hire the right people? Is the program up and running? You know, so that takes a lot of work and a huge undertaking. So shout out the coalition, the issue group chair, the steering committee, because like to your point, even after the budget is voted on, we still have to go back and do the work of saying where the dollars are actually going and, you know, all the programs actually doing what they're supposed to do.
That's right. No, I talked to some of the leaders, you know, that we work with in public housing, and they're like, am I going to feel that, Daniel? You know, so it's like great that we want it, but, you know, how is that going to trickle down to the individual is always the important question. Folks, if you have any questions or comments for the folks here from the Fair Budget Coalition, give us a call, 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893 is the number to call to join the conversation. Salim, anything to add to, you know, the better things we saw in the budget?
So I think what we're seeing that is better is the process that we have as an organization to go after the budget. Getting, like Nikaya mentioned earlier, the ability to have access to having your voice heard and to understand the budget. And so now that we have had some minor successes in some spaces, when we go back to the residents and talk to them, we can say, look, your voice was heard on this issue. We have been able to offer this process. So we didn't get all of what we wanted, but we're moving progressively towards that. And I think that's important for people to see. Small victories are very, 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 very important. And the quality of life that people have sometimes isn't, we're not able to see the improvements in that immediately. Sometimes you're not able to see how a structural change will impact you because it takes place over time. And so, you know, with this budget, what I think you'll see is over time, those 6 months that you had to go into the office every 6 months, now having to do that, you know, only once a year, you will see the impact on your quality of life change, because now that's the day that you now have to go off and do some other things. That's less anxiety that you feel having to go into some of those spaces wondering if or you will or won't be, you know, recertified. So I think we have to look at some of those other things that's just not in the numbers.
No, that's right. And I think, you know, the public housing funding is something to use as an example, in the sense that there was a point in time when the local government was like, that's federal stuff. You know, why would we invest our money? You know, those are federal properties. You know, why would we do that? But, you know, the great organizing that happened before me, that the organizers at Empower DC were doing, and in general, in, you know, the whole ecosystem of advocates, folks were saying, no, we need that local funding. And little by little, you know, we've shifted the values in the budget when it comes to public housing. And, you know, do we still need more work? Yes. But as you mentioned, Salim, you know, little by little, we do change it and it becomes a better fight. I believe we have a caller on the line. Caller, if you want to introduce yourself and give us your question or comment, please go ahead.
Yes. My name is Paul, and I'm calling from Maryland right now. But what I'm asking is that one of the problems I find in Washington, D.C., is that back in the 50s and 60s, Washington, D.C. had a school system that trained apprenticeship in the public school system, which prepared people for good-paying jobs, whether it was in plumbing, electrical, carpentry, drywall, you name it. And then they shifted that apprenticeship program from the public school system to the unions, which meant that people did not have to live in Washington, D.C. to be in the apprenticeship program. And in fact, if you look at the unions today, probably 85-90% of the people in the apprenticeship programs are not from Washington, D.C. And so the benefit of those good-paying jobs got shifted from residents of Washington, D.C. to Maryland and Virginia and elsewhere. And I think that when we look at the budget, one of the things we need to look at is not just the quantity of money, but specifically how that money is used. Back in the day when you had music taught in school, the school actually offered instruments for students to learn the music and actually practice the music. And that's why when you had singers like Marvin Gaye and many other singers that came out of Washington, D.C., they knew how to write their own music. They knew how to play their own music. But in today's world, you don't have that burden being offered anymore in the public school system. And so I think it's very important when we talk about the budget, not just to talk about the quantity of how much money gets spent, but how that money gets spent in a way that actually creates a economic base for the communities of Washington, D.C. Are you going to continue to have more and more residents of Washington, D.C. not being able to afford to live in Washington, D.C., while people living in the suburbs able to come back and live big inside of Washington, D.C.?
Well, thank you so much for your comments. I think it's the point we were just making that, you know, it is a year-round process. It's, you know, winning the money, that fight, but it's also being vigilant and making sure that it's getting used wisely. So thank you for your call. Nikhea or Salim, anything to add to that?
No, sir.
Okay, great. Well, we've had we've gone through a couple of the processes for the budget to get approved. Where are we now? What needs to happen? And are there any more opportunities for folks to, you know, get involved in the process? As we do, we're kind of on the wrap-up end, right? We're towards the end of the process. Where are we now and what needs to happen?
One of the things I want to name is, like, you know, we're towards the end of the process for this year, which means we're towards the beginning of the process for next year.
That's right.
I don't want folks to feel like they was left out. They can't join. You know what I'm saying? They towards the end. There's nothing I can do now. Now, that means we're just about to get started for looking at how money should be spent for fiscal year 24, because it's cyclical, right? And so at this point, we are in between. I'm going to talk a little bit earlier about the in-between space between the mayor releasing their budget and the council voting and finalizing the budget. And so that's where we are. And so in this part of the year, we see advocates, organizers, including Fair Budget Coalition, focus on moving the council and saying, hey, remember that priority letter you wrote? Here's some things you missed. Or remember that priority letter you wrote? Make sure you vote like this. Or, hey, look, you know, look at the mayor's budget. Here are the things that we're naming are missing. Here are the things I know you care about. Let's make sure you make those edits in your working sessions towards the end of April so that when y'all vote and finalize the budget, it has all the things we need. This is also a great time for communities to be activated because, again, the council members are accountable to you. Is your council member, right? And so if you have a council member and let's say your council member in Ward 5, this is the time for Ward 5 to stand up and say, okay, this is how we want money to be spent and make sure your council is hearing you. And again, using Fair Budget's budget platform as a tool to say, okay, look, this is what the mayor has or hasn't funded. This is what my community needs, and I'm holding you accountable for this, right? And so the advocates are doing their part and make sure the council is hearing us. We need the community members to do the same thing. And Daniel, like you said, we're towards the end of the process for this year, but as soon as it's over, we'll begin starting for next year. And so one of the things we're looking forward to in this upcoming budget season is making sure that we are, again, looking to our residents and our community members and say, what are the things that you're seeing in your community? What would you like to be funded? What's the world that you're imagining? And how can we make sure that your tax dollars are getting you that world, right? Towards the end of the summer, we'll be hosting our own budget forums because we want to make sure they're not at the last minute where, okay, the budget already out and we just hearing you, you know what I'm saying, just to hear you. We already drafted the budget, but we're just going to make some time to talk, right? But we're going to have our own budget forums before we even start to draft our recommendations so that we're talking to the community and saying, okay, if you were in charge of the budget, how would you spend it? And reminding folks, you are in charge of the budget. It's your tax dollars, right? And so taking the pause and like really engaging with the community and making sure that folks have the understanding, the knowledge, and the skills to say, this is how the budget works, and this is how you make sure that we're using the budget accordingly. And so that's something to look forward to. In the summer, we'll also be doing a lot of base building. One of our organizers, Frankie, shout you out, came up with this real dope tagline. The budget is everybody's business, and it really is. And so we're going to be pushing that this summer. The budget is everybody's business and making sure that the residents of D.C. know that, but not only know that, but can operationalize that knowledge and towards making budget demands around our tax dollars.
Yes, and shout out to Frankie. Thank you, Frankie, for pulling us all together. Big shout out to you.
To that, so what Nakai said, the budget is a proposal.
Yep.
Council approves the proposal. That doesn't mean throughout that fiscal year that things can't be changed. Because somehow, some way, shape, or form, money be found for things that wasn't in the budget. And so I want people to always remember that this is a proposed budget. We go into the year with this plan, but that doesn't mean things always work to those plans. And as we saw this year, somehow money came up for building blocks. As an example, and it was like, where did 60 something million dollars come from for building blocks? And granted, if the budget is, you know, 16, 17 billion dollars, percentage wise, $60 million isn't a lot, but where was $60 million at for it to come out of, you know, nowhere? But I mean, I know that's moving around some different things and placing them in some spaces, but there is money that can be reallocated as well. You know, just like in your personal life, you have issues that come up that you didn't budget for, but you pull something from some other place, or you go find a way to advocate for yourself to get more funds. Well, the city does the same thing too. And then there are emergency funds that the city has. I believe it's like the rainy day fund. I believe that is the name of it. So there's money that's there that's probably not allocated somewhere that we can still advocate for. So like Nakai said, the budget is a year long process. That never stops. It's just like a hamster wheel is going to keep going and going and going. So you can always advocate for the budget, even after the vote has happened.
Well, that's right. And I think what's also, and I appreciate that you all will have your own forums, because if you attend the mayor's forums, you would think we were broke. You would think D.C. is a broke city, broke down. The agency heads have to, they literally, it, to me, is like the Hunger Games stuff. Like,
please give me the,
yeah.
It was like a game show. It was gross.
It's like a game show. And if you don't give me the money, we're not going to have XYZ. And the reality is that this city is rich. They always have, the city is making more money than they expected. They're able to put those dollars into the rainy day fund and always have an excuse or not being able to spend it. But, you know, that's why why I think the important work that you all are doing and all our organizations cooperatively are doing is making the demand. We know better and we can make informed asks. It's not like we're just saying just spend it and being irresponsible. We know it's there and we know there's a need. So it needs to be invested in. As we close up, make sure we get this in. How can folks get more involved with the good work that you all are doing? If somebody's not a member yet, as an individual or as an organization, how can they join? Who can they reach out to?
So let me earn my keep here. you can contact me directly, Salim, S-A-L-I-M, at fairbudget.org. You can go to the website, fairbudget.org, and you'll see information on how to become a part of the Fair Budget Coalition. It's open to individuals as well as organizations. So we encourage everybody to ask yourself, how can I be a part of a group that knows how to advocate, that has these relationships, that is on the ground, and that is eager to make sure that our quality of life is better? Because that's the intent of the mission. That's the intent of the organization. That is the mission, to figure out how can we improve the quality of life for residents. We say that the budget is a moral document, right? So we want you to come be a part, and we're open to all folks in the District of Columbia that, you know, that want to be a part, regardless of how you identify. So come on and be a part.
I'm going to double that, y'all. Come through, become a member. One of the things, again, that like we're very intentional about is making space and making this an accessible conversation, accessible process. Budget can get very wonky. Budget policy is even wonkier, right? But again, the budget is everybody's business. And so one of the things that you gain through membership is being able to come into the conversation. You know, you ever been to a dinner party and you come in, you feel like everybody's talking, they're talking about something, you don't know what they're talking about, and you don't know how to hop in the conversation. You just kind of sitting there eating your hors d'oeuvres. We don't do that here. We make sure that everybody is fully integrated into the space. We do orientations. We're intentional about making sure that traditionally excluded voices and traditionally invalidated ways of knowing and being have space in this coalition. And so you may have a way of thinking about the records that we haven't thought about. You may have a community demand that we haven't even imagined up. You may have a way of knowing or sharing knowledge or just an experience that we need to know. Please come through, become a member. Our constituent leaders, we pay stipends. If you don't have the tech, a lot of things are virtual right now. We give away tech. You ain't got a computer, we got one for you. You don't have a tablet, we got one. But just come through, become a member, be part of the conversation, make your budget demands. These are your tax dollars. It's your future as a DC resident. If you got kids, this is your kids' future. So only thing you got to do is hit Saleem up or go to the website, become a member, and we have space for you here. We'll validate you. We'll make sure you have all the tools you need. We'll make sure that you're informing us and you're informing the budget platform, all the above. But come through, become a member. This work is important. We cannot do it alone. It's our coalition that pushes this work forward.
That's right. As long as I've known the Fair Budget Coalition, you know, they worked out of the same church we did. We were there in the church basement setting, you know, yep, the priorities for this. So it's not some sort of wonky, you know, fancy boardroom meeting organization. It's a people-centered organization that really has an eye for justice and has been doing this good work in the city for several decades, and will continue to do so. I know y'all got some social media. Can y'all just drop the social media right quick so folks can follow you and keep up with the good work?
Fair Budget DC. So if you're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Fair Budget DC.
Wonderful. A cute little newsletter that we send out every Friday called Fair Fridays. And again, it's just another way to keep folks engaged. We do on our social media something called FBC Explains, because again, a lot of terms is very jargony. If you're not familiar with budget policy, you're hearing about these hearings. What is a cow hearing? I don't know. And so we're explaining what the terms are, the terms that council may be throwing around, the terms that you're hearing in the mayor's budget that you may not be familiar with, the press conferences, you're hearing people talk about these agencies. What do they do? We're here to explain all that, break it down, make it accessible, and again, make sure our residents are heard and know how to be impactful in this process. And then we're really shifting power. Like that's what it really comes down to, us shifting the power, because again, it's our tax dollars and we need to make sure we're standing in our power when it comes to our budget. Follow us, tweet us, become a member, hop on Instagram. We have a tax day campaign coming up. We're asking DC residents, how do you want your tax dollars spent? So we got a cute little template that you can print and just write in. I want to spend my tax dollars on this. Don't spend my tax dollars on this. You say spend my tax dollars on healthy school meals. Don't spend it on incarcerating black bodies. Spend my tax dollars on giving SNAP a raise. Don't spend it on I'm not going to say too many things not to spend it on. But, you know, you can get very specific as you want to, you know what I'm saying? And it could be, you know, spend it on, I've heard a lot of my elders say, where are my tax dollars going? Because I got all these potholes out here. Spend my tax dollars on the potholes, y'all, okay? Spend it on the schools. Spend it on bringing back the VOTEC program, as our brother said earlier, right? So that campaign is coming up. It's a really good way to get involved and just let the council and the mayor know where you want your tax dollars spent. And so tax day is around the corner. We want those pictures all over our social media. So if you're interested in that, again, send us the email, hit us on social media. We'll make sure you got the template. You can let everybody know where to spend your tax dollars. But again, come through, become a member, and join the push to make sure we have a fair budget and the mayor and the council are taking the act of justice and meeting our residents' needs.
That's right. Thank you for flagging that one, too, because I know I did my little one, too, already. So that was ready to go. So thank you both once again for taking the time to join us to break down the budget, to let folks know how they can involve, and, of course, for the great work that the Fair Budget Coalition continues to do around a more just, more fair budget. Thank you both so much. Good luck, continued success. And this has to be an annual thing. It is, but let's make it official. You know, once a year, at least, we break down the budget. So thank you all. You've got the news coming up in just a minute. So make sure to stay tuned. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I want to give a big shout out to Frankie and to Sunny.
And Sunny. Yes. Sunny came through. Right. Our constituents testified at this hearing and they did an amazing job. And Sunny's doing a thing. Frankie's doing a thing. So shout y'all out. Super proud of y'all work. And we could not do any of this without y'all.
That's right. Peace, y'all. Thank you so much.
WPFW presents Democracy Now!'s coverage of the Republican National Convention, Monday, July 15th through Friday, July 19th at 11 a.m. It is your support that makes this possible. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. As the investigation into the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump continues, officials are digging into the 20-year-old shooter's life and talking to people who knew him. One of his former high school counselors, Jim Knapp, said the young man was, quote, respectful and never got into any kind of trouble during his school years. He also said he was as quiet as a church mouse and seemed content with being a loner. Jim Knapp also noted that the shooter didn't publicly show any support of Trump or Biden, even when his classmates did. But he acknowledged that, quote, anybody could snap, anybody could have issues. Though investigators have successfully broken into the shooter's phone and searched his computer, looked through his search history and bedroom, and interviewed his family and friends, they still have not found any evidence to suggest his motive for shooting the former president. A verdict was reached today in the federal corruption trial against New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez. He has been found guilty on 18 charges tied to a scheme where he accepted bribes, including hundreds of thousands of dollars, gold bars, and a Mercedes-Benz in exchange for helping foreign governments. The senator maintained that he was not guilty throughout the 8-week trial, with his lawyers arguing that the gifts he accepted did not qualify as bribes because prosecutors had failed to prove that he took any specific action as a result of receiving them. However, Bob Menendez now faces the prospect of decades in prison and possible expulsion from the Democratic Party. His wife, Nadine, also faces charges in the bribery case, but her trial was delayed so she could undergo breast cancer treatment. She has also pleaded not guilty. Her husband's lawyers had attempted to shift the blame to her, portraying her as a financially troubled individual who hoped to, quote, get cash and assets any way she could. To your local news, in New York City, council members are raising concerns about the next step of Mayor Eric Adams' plan to bring thousands of apartments to the East Bronx. The mayor's Bronx Metro North neighborhood plan will add 7,500 new homes alongside four new rail stops in Hunts Point, Parkchester, Van Ness, Morris Park, and Co-op City. Critics say, though, that the 46-block stretch along the Metro North train line that the city hopes to revitalize has nowhere near enough schools, cops, firefighters, and even sewers to handle the influx of new residents. Local council member Kevin Riley flatly said during a hearing at City Hall, and I quote, "If you are going to bring more people into a neighborhood, you are going to need to improve existing infrastructure to address the frequent flooding from storms that we are experiencing, more park spaces, schools, and increased funding for our fire and police stations," end quote. In the D.C. area, truancy remains a significant issue. A student is considered truant if he or she accumulates at least 10 full days of unexcused absences during the school year. One organization is trying to reduce truancy by administering guaranteed payments to D.C. families. The organization is Mothers Outreach Network, a racial justice and anti-poverty nonprofit group in D.C. Their payment program will be carried out at a charter school in Northeast D.C. called the Social Justice School. Starting later this month, 15 families will each get $2,400 over the course of 3 months, with money distributed weekly onto debit cards. This guaranteed income program is the first of its kind offered by a school in the district. Melody Webb, executive director of Mothers Outreach Network, spoke on the purpose of the program, saying, and I quote, "What we hope to do is demonstrate the importance of providing parents with economic security so they don't have to struggle to get their children to school